Good morning or afternoon, everyone just tuning in here to our Heat Press for Profit podcast. My name is Dave, and I want to welcome you in to episode number 48. Now, this is also the first episode of 2024, so I'm so very happy to be here joining you today on this wonderful Friday, and we've got a great episode coming up today, and that is the heat transfer answers. So we're going to talk about printing, pricing, profit models, and so much more while we get through here. If you are tuning in live from Facebook or Instagram or our YouTube pages where we are broadcasting this, or if you're listening on the replay, we always love to know where you're tuning in from. So if you're watching on YouTube or any form where you could comment, go ahead and drop us a comment of where you're listening from and what your shop is. We always like to see the friendly faces that we meet out at events, as well as, of course, those that we see in our heat printing community. So I do want to mention before we get too far in that, of course, here at Stalls, we always aim for these podcasts and essentially all of our educational content, whether it be at those shows or on our YouTube channels, or even if you just want the little snippets that we put out there to be fun on TikTok. All of this content is built to inspire you. And we really want to support you and your decorating business, your t-shirt business, your side hustle, your print shop, your on-demand powerhouse of an e-commerce store, whatever it may be. We are here to support you, and we want you to learn. We want to be able to connect with you, and we want you to reach your own success, whatever that may look like. So I urge you, you're in the right spot here if you're listening to me, but make sure you go over to Facebook and join our Heat Press for Profit powered by Stalls group. It is an absolutely fantastic community. And as I talk about some of the questions here today, though a lot of these questions did come from that Facebook group. So just be sure, if you have your own questions here, let me know right over in that chat section. I have all of these chats coming into the studio here in real time. So we could see like Sam here from Royal Arch 5 Custom Apparel in East Orange, New Jersey, which I have a topic I want to talk about New Jersey coming up here. So Sam, I hope that you're able to chime in with maybe some experience and leverage your opinion there. So if you have any questions whatsoever, just like Cindy. Hey, Cindy. Just saw Cindy over at the Impressions Expo last week, and got to meet Cindy for the first time. We had some great conversations about apparel decorating, and she had some wonderful feedback. It's always great. I love talking with apparel decorators. So Cindy, from the Pacific Northwest up there, I hope the weather is nice and friendly. We got a little bit of a reprieve here in the Midwest where it's not super, super cold, but it sure was nice to jump out to California, which we do have. If you are listening to this on replay, you'll probably already see it on the YouTube channel. But today, right after this podcast, we're going to be releasing a recap of what we saw, what's brand new for the decorating industry, and some awesome apparel vendors out there that you should check out. But we put together a wonderful video from our time at the Impressions Expo out in Long Beach, where we did meet Cindy and I got to hang out. So we'll have all of that on our YouTube page, along with hours and hours of education, tips and tricks, and a whole bunch of stuff that we have there. So I want to get into the questions because we have a whole bunch to cover today. And if you guys are asking questions as well in here, I want to try to answer them in real time. So don't be shy. Feel free to fire away. Love hearing from you guys just as, I'd much rather hear from you guys than just hear me talk, but I'm going to share some of the expertise and points of view and experiences that I've had in the past 14 years of apparel decorating, as well as I've had the luxury of working through three different commercial shops in my career so far, as well as visiting dozens of other successful shops out there. So I always love to leverage this knowledge and help you out. I'm so fortunate that my job here with Stalls and Transfer Express is built to help your business thrive. So let's buckle up and let's jump right into the questions. Again, if you have any questions and you're watching live here with us, let us know in the chat section, but we'll jump right in. So our first question here today comes from Teresa Martini. Why do garment decorators in California need a garment license to operate? So this is kind of a loaded question. I did a lot of research when I first saw this question come in, because here in Ohio, there, of course, you need a business license, a tax ID, an employer identification number, say if you're going to be hiring employees, which goes along with setting up an LLC or anything else to get your business, let's say, legit, right? Well, in California, the Division of Labor and Standard Enforcement also requires that you have a garment license. Just because the garment decorating industry or garment industry manufacturing, decorating as a whole is heavily regulated in California, essentially to ensure the labor laws are being followed and workers are treated properly. We've all heard the term sweatshop, right? And of course, we like to think, or we like to make sure, that these things don't exist here in the United States and workers are treated fairly. So I did pull a quote straight from the website, the California Division of Labor and Standard Enforcement .gov or whatever it was. I don't remember it offhand here, but every person engaged in the business of garment manufacturing must register with the California Labor Commissioner. This registration requirement includes leasing companies, temporary agencies to provide employees provide employees engaged in sewing, cutting, making, processing, repairing, finishing is where us garment decorators and apparel decorators fit into that, assembling or otherwise preparing garments or articles of apparel for sale. So printing definitely falls into that finishing part. So you are, you have to be compliant. And while they might not come knocking, the DLSE, that's the Division of Labor Standard Enforcement, may come knocking. And if you go searching on forums, just like I did to get some real decorator insight, most of the decorator insight is, hey guys, I didn't think it would happen, but today it happened to me. They threatened to shut down my shop. So if you are serious about garment decorating in the state of California, this is something that you do have to look out for. So Teresa, thank you for bringing it to light. And in my research as well, I did find that the New York and New Jersey have similar laws that you need a garment license to officially operate as a garment decorator. Now, of course, I didn't like go into super, super in-depth here. So that's where I'm hoping that our friends from New Jersey might be able to jump in, or maybe I see CJ Fisher from upstate New York. Do you guys have to have garment licenses, and do you have a garment license, or have you been kind of skirting in the gray area? Don't call yourself out if you've been skirting in the gray area. Okay. Just don't do it. I don't want to get you in trouble by any means, but from what I heard from decorators, they said it doesn't matter if you have a tax ID or a business license or you're actually incorporated as an LLC. If you're advertising and have a business name or business profiles on Google or Facebook, they will find you and they'll come visit you and ask you a few questions. So I don't want anybody to get in trouble. And this goes into kind of the licensing talks that we see quite often, where people are like, nobody gets caught. And then Disney or ABC rolls around and starts really dinging people and going after people for using intellectual property, which in most cases is a cease and desist. But if you don't get the cease and desist or you ignore that cease and desist, we've heard of print shops being essentially shuttered. And if you don't have an LLC, it could get really scary really, really quick. So I always urge everyone to stay stay on the straight and narrow, do things above the book, so that if anything does happen, that you are covered and protected. You have an LLC, so none of your personal assets are involved with the company at all. So you are protected in a way, but also don't steal things, do things legally, of course. I am always going to urge you to do that. This next question comes in from our buddy and a frequent contributor to that Heat Press for Profit Facebook group that I was talking about, and a personal friend of mine out in Colorado, is Ty Kane. And Ty asked a great question right before the Long Beach Impressions Expo about the research and development that Stahls puts in. So Ty asks, how much research and development goes into a new product? Is there a Stahls standard of minimum hours, time, and money, or et cetera? Would you ever consider pooling the industry experts to form a new product development and testing group? So this is a very loaded question, as are many of the questions that I've selected to bring onto the show. And if you guys have any loaded questions of your own, we'll get to them in just a little bit. But please let me know. Comment wherever you are watching this from. So with our research and development here at Stalls and Transfer Express, I can say being involved in it for a few products and being very good friends with one of the top of the research and development department is that the research and testing that we put into products is extensive and maybe sometimes overkill. So we do have a selected group of industry experts or decorators that we trust that we do use as consultants with new releases from time to time. Of course, if it's just a new color of a substrate coming out or a new ink that we're using, a lot of that is developed internally. But if we do see or identify decorators out there who say, hey, I use a lot of puff inks, and if we're developing new puff colors, we're definitely going to get them in their hands to get that real world view. We know that our products don't exist in a laboratory or a vacuum. They do go out in the world, and they are incredibly important pieces of the puzzle for decorators just like you out there. So I know how much kind of stringent criteria that we test all of our products for. So even if it is just a new ink color or a new substrate, they do go to independent wash labs or essentially independent facilities for wash testing to ensure that they're going to hold up to the industry standard of 50 plus wash dry cycles that we guarantee for almost all of our products. And we are very, very transparent about any print methods that may differ from that. Of course, you could go much higher than 50 washing cycles, but that is considered by the industry standard, at least in my experience working through different shops. That's typically where the lifespan of a garment ends, that after especially 50 wash dry cycles, the fibers of that t-shirt are wearing out. And I could say that like my favorite t-shirts that I love to wear and I wear all the time typically don't make it more than maybe a year or two before they start getting holes in them. That's like wearing it every single week. But then we're talking 50 washes over that span if I'm wearing it at least once a week. But this is a loaded question because it does vary based on product. I know specifically for the development of UltraColor Max, right, which by the entire industry is held as a very high regard for a high quality product. And seeing the direct-to-film industry myself over the past 2-3 years really develop, I don't think there's a direct-to-film printer on the market today that was the same exact printer that was on the market last year. So there's a lot of innovation that continuously keeps happening even outside of Stalls as we look at that direct-to-film print method. But there is one thing that the offer of the direct-to-film has not changed. From Stalls, UltraColor Max remains almost the identical product as it was released 3 years ago. How is that possible? When so much innovation is happening, it is the research and development into utilizing the correct printers, the correct substrates, the correct inks, the correct adhesives, the correct temperatures, and testing it and testing it and testing it. I know just for direct-to-film as an example was developed over multiple years with probably, I don't know the amount of it, but probably millions of dollars worth of research and development and equipment. I know one of the biggest asked questions that I'm not going to answer here today is what printer do you guys use at Stalls? And I'm not going to answer it because it isn't a printer that's available for sale. It is a proprietary machine that was developed by our research and development department to ensure that we were going to bring the highest quality product to market that we could. Stalls is all about quality and has been known for quality and service for over 90 years, right? Why are we going to stop with a digital printing technique just because it is like the cutting edge and we need to rush it to market? We weren't the first ones to bring it to market, and we're not going to be the last ones, right? There's a ton of DTF providers out there, but to bring what we consider, or even as me as a decorator consider a hot peel or a the top of the industry transfer is that hot peel, right? Single step application and an absolutely stellar hand feel on quality. I've seen direct to film prints that do feel thick and heavy on a garment, or they look glossy and kind of like those transfers from the 1990s or the early or the late 80s, right? Where the digital transfer technology just wasn't there. It had to be on a thick substrate to be able to print on darker garments, just like this green hoodie that I'm wearing right here, right? So where it's like, oh, you could get away with hand feel, say if you're using like sublimation or something like that on lighter garments, The way that we could do that is making sure that the ink densities and their inks have the correct pigment density in them, so you could use less ink, so that the hand feel is lighter, that you're using the right adhesive, that you're using the right coverage of white on the back. All of these settings are dialed in by a team of experts that every single time I ask them a simple question, even the answer goes over my head when they start talking about the chemistry of everything. So we have an entire team. There are research and development teams at almost every single Stahl's facility working on the products to ensure they could be trusted by you. We know how important it is in the supply chain that ensuring that you have the product that you could stand your brand behind is incredibly important for us here at Stahl's. And essentially that comes back to kind of what I said at the top of the podcast is like, this is detrimental to your success as a decorator. So we want to ensure that you have the quality products that you could hang your brand's hat on and that are going to wow your customers while also being easy and efficient to use. From the quality of the transfer to the application to the wash testing and even beyond, right? So we have everything independently certified for the wash testing, of course, but we send it out to labs to be CPSIA compliant for the United States government, the Federal Trade Commission here, as well as OCOTEC certified for Europe and beyond to ensure that there are no harmful chemicals in our products that we are delivering to you. There's no fumes or chemicals that rubbing on the ink is going to rub off on you. And I know the CPSIA compliance and OCOTEC are huge for youth garments as well to make sure that our children are protected from any harmful chemicals, especially moving forward into the year when we don't know, you know, like these microplastics we had nothing to know about. And now it's we don't want any of that with our transfers. We want to ensure that you are safe and that you could trust your product. So Ty, to answer your question, there is extensive research and development that goes into every single product, whether it be a new product line like the Ultra Color Max Direct to Film or anything else. But there is a huge, huge process of that. And even in the supply chain on it as well. So vetting vendors and suppliers to ensure that we are going to have that consistent quality so that you can share the success of that consistent quality as well. And I know I'll give a shout out to Mike over in our digital research and development department. Every time I see that guy, I've worked with him now for well over a decade. We worked at the previous print shop to coming here to Stahl's. And every single time I saw that guy, he was, essentially halfway into a machine, tweaking it and fixing print heads, whether it be direct to garment printers, direct to film printers, and everything beyond. The dude is an absolute genius, and it's a pleasure to know him. And I know he does absolutely fantastic work here for Stahl's. Let me go to the chat here. I just want to make sure that I'm not missing any questions that we could jump into right now. So let's see. This is a question from Mike Ollie's Embroidery. Direct to film. And thanks for popping this one in here, Stahl's TV. I think that's Carly in the background. We have an entire team that puts these things together to ensure that we have this some great content for you guys. So this question is, direct-to-film seems to be taking over the market. How does it wash ability compare to screen printing? That's a fantastic question, right? Because we do see direct-to-film absolutely taking over the industry for a myriad of reasons, right? It gives you the ability to print one-offs a lot more efficiently and inexpensively compared to, say, to other print methods that have been traditionally used, like direct to garment, right? There is no cutting. Everything comes ready to apply. Cotton polyester, cotton poly blends, a low temperature adhesive on that allows you to get under that scorchability threshold of those heat sensitive garments, which coming from the screen printing world myself, I know that those heat sensitive garments can be a pain to put on a traditional screen printing press, even when you have to start registering then. And I mean, registering colors by itself, if you've never done it on a screen printing press, could be super simple, right? Line it up. And as you start printing, things move. And now you're having to adjust in the middle of the run. There's a whole bunch of stuff that I could get into on that. We don't have 6 hours today for a Dave chat. So, but yes, they are tested to the same durability. So I have direct to film transfers that were the first ones I ever applied to a garment. And that was 2021, even when we were still in the research and development stage. And we were kind of just testing things out. We were throwing artwork over to the research and development department. And that hoodie and t-shirt have had to have been washed over 50 times. And they look like the day they were printed. They might even look better because they've been through the wash, soften up a little bit. And that's the thing, that it all comes down to the application. So compared to screen printing, I've seen a lot of screen prints in my life. And when I first started, I used to do the tug test, right? So you give it a tug of the t-shirt. Does the plastisol ink crack or does it stay together? Because that's kind of a nice, easy way to just see if something's going to be durable. And there's plenty of prints that have cracked, you know, right off press, right out of the dryer, even cooled down. Technically, you should let them cool down, but they'll crack right afterwards, right? There was a shirt that I bought at a barbecue joint down in Texas the last time I was there. I put it on for the first time, and the logo on the left chest cracked. Not even washed, right? So when you talk about cracking or falling apart, DTF doesn't necessarily crack or peel off. It stays together as a single substrate. And that's something that I really do love about transfers in general, is that they typically do exceed the quality of screen printing or the wash testing of screen printing with a much lighter hand feel too. Because if you were to stack up two strokes, a base and a color of plastisol ink through a screen printing press, in most cases, it's going to be thicker on the garment and heavier on the garment than a direct-to-film print would be. So it definitely is right in that same industry standard of it's fantastic, right? And it's going to last that lifetime of the garment. I will say, compared to direct-to-garment, you could get much better color fidelity and even some detail, and then like that look of a direct-to-garment print. You could tell when it's a digitally printed direct to t-shirt print, just because the colors aren't like even. You'll always see that little stippling, that ink jetting, right? Even when you're using the quarter of $1 million direct to garment printing machines that are made for commercial capacity, and even the smaller ones then too. And then you have to talk about your white layer, and so things aren't necessarily the most opaque. And that's where direct to film is winning with the screen printing and both the direct to garment. So we see it being used so much more for that agile with the low quantity on demand, as e-commerce takes over so much more of industry share versus the bulk wholesale printing that the print industry has typically been. So Mike, I hope I answered that question there for you. Let's go down and see if we've got some more here. Another question from Instagram. This is a good one. This is Versola Design Studios. Is there a dye blocker version of Ultra Color Max in the pipeline? I may have seen some things, but I will leave it at that. But yes, dye blocker has been one of the kind of hot requests when it comes to direct to film, to be able to offer that ability to print on either sublimated or those heavily dyed polyesters that have a tendency to migrate on that. So yes, I know we'll leave that to research and development. They're I'm sure they're testing things, right? We'll leave it at that. great question. Let's see here. Janilda Moreno says, this past Christmas, we decorated some garments and Jiffy has started making transfers. You get what you pay for. So that's a decorator point of view right there that we've heard echoed over and over and over again, that there is always a race to the bottom on price. But with that comes inexpensive machines or maybe not the best quality. So that's the thing, is like, and if you're going to hang your hat on that, that could harm your business, especially just starting out, right? You want to build that repeat business, those repeat customers. You want to wow them with not only the quality of your end product, but also your service as well. So both of those play a humongous aspect into being able to run a profitable and successful t-shirt printing shop. Let's see. I'm scrolling through just a few of these. Cindy says, send me all of the glitter plastisol transfers and I will test that. We will. I'm going to go back to my list of questions here as we continue on down. This is a great question here from Pam, right? And Her question is, this is Pam McAllister from Facebook. One of my most common issues when pressing items is getting it centered straight and the right height. Do you use a tool to help with good placement? Which ones are worth it and which ones aren't helpful? So Pam, that is a very loaded question. I'm going to say that after every question now, apparently. But I could go for maybe 3 hours just talking about how print sizing and placement and digital mockups could help you. I urge you to come to an Impressions Expo or any of our trade shows, because we do have, it's at least hour-long education, I think, at the minimum, and 3 hours of a workshop when we go into print placement and sizing, and we actually get hands-on with it. As one of the classes that I've taught as recently as Long Beach last year, or this year, just a couple weeks ago. But one thing is that it does vary based on your image size. So we have some great charts that are built, number one, to just help you out and get in that ballpark right away. But it really starts with loading the shirt on the platen correctly every single time. That's going to be the number one thing to get those consistent prints. A buddy of mine, Marshall Adkinson, industry consultant here, always says that in any industry, specifically the printing industry, consistent, repeatable results, right? Consistent, predictable, repeatable results are exactly what you need to succeed when you are a commercial decorator in any regard. So if you're printing for a school, you want to ensure that there's going to be no snags in your production. So that's the first step, right? Is loading the same every single time. That's going to ensure that your shirt is straight. Because if you line up to the platen or line up to any other placement guides, which I'll get into here in just a minute, that those can be misleading if the shirt is not loaded properly on there. And we have some great videos that show you how to do it on our YouTube page. And I believe there's even some stuff on that Heat Press for Profit group as well that'll help you out. So either Stahls TV on YouTube or even on our Transfer Express page as well. I know over the past couple years, we've done some really, really even extended learning where it's an hour-long webinar, and you'll find that on the Transfer Express YouTube page. With that, I will say that left chest is typically the most challenging, and that's where some of those like t-shirt rulers come in. With a left chest, you commonly see it too low, which is not a flattering print to wear. And as apparel decorators, we want to make stuff that people are excited to wear, right? And want to wear. So when the print's too low and not in a flattering location, nobody's going to be wearing that t-shirt. If it's in the armpit, right? So that left chest is just a little bit too far over to the side. That's in the armpit. Also not a flattering print to want to wear, and doesn't really look pro. So those just little t-shirt rulers. So they're essentially the shape of like a crew neck collar, and you could just align it, and then it has lines denoting the center or lining up to the edges of the collar, which is going to put you in that placement for a left chest or a right chest. Those I see very, very commonly used for some decorators just getting started out. And even I see pro level decorators doing it as well. So it is a great thing to be able to set up. Now, after 14 years of printing t-shirts, I use the rulers that I have on me at all time, and that are my fingers, right? So three fingers down from the collar is where I'm going to place the majority of my shirts, which works out to, I believe it's two and one quarter, 2.25 inches is where I usually will place a graphic down. But again, like I mentioned, it does depend on the image sizing. Very, very tall graphics are going to go much closer to the collar than that standard placement that I use, which is why I always use two points of reference. I'll do my measurements first and then ensure that it's going to meet the seams or any identifiers of placement that I could use on the garment. So for a big full front shirt, right? I'll start with that 2 inches down from the collar, 1.5 to 3 inches down from the collar. But I will try to center the graphic of the center of the artwork. I'm going to put that right in line with where the sleeves, so where your armpit would be, essentially where the sleeves meet the body of the garment. Draw a line from sleeve to sleeve, and that should be right on the center line of your garment, and that center line from the sleeve to sleeve, that's going to be the middle of the artwork. So with a taller graphic, that's going to move the placement up closer to the collar. It's really hard to discuss it in a podcast, but we have some great tools out there that show you how to do it. And then even with the left chest, to ensure you're not too low or too high, to go and look at the sleeve itself, right? The sleeve is going to come out that same part of the body. as it's always going to, regardless of what size or what style of t-shirt you're printing. So it ensures you don't put it too low. So I'll always half the sleeve and then half the bottom again. So I have quarters of each sleeve, and that's going to be my center line or my baseline for that left chest print. So I hope you follow along with that. But Pam, that is a fantastic question. Of course, there are lasers and the laser grids that you could project. There are the sliding t-shirt rulers. There are just regular rulers that you could have laying around, the wood rulers that we all used growing up in school, right? And now even too, if you haven't seen the new ProPlace IQ that will be available here in spring of 2024. We debuted it at Printing United just a couple months ago, and we had it at Long Beach, which I know a lot of decorators were able to get their hands on and actually see the unit in real life. But essentially, it's projecting the image of your transfer at real size on the garment. So not only you just don't have to hold the actual transfer up to it to see the placement. Now you could project it and know exactly where that's going to be placed. And it even has snap to location, say for a left chest or a center chest. And we're working on ensuring that those are configured for the proper size of your artwork too. So if you have a tiny little just 2x2 print, it's going to place that in a left chest location differently than if you had, say, a 4x4 print, right? There's going to be slight changes to that design where it's going to move over a quarter inch or a half inch. And those are all planned out for you. So you could just select the size, select the transfer and location, and boom, it's going to actually project it. So you just place the transfer to the light. And if you loaded the shirt on properly, you're all set and good to go. Curious asks, this is a great question that kind of goes along with what we were just talking about with placement and sizing and everything. Curious asks, do you always thread the shirt when applying a transfer? I do, but that is because the press that I use is a Hotronix auto clam with the caddy stand. So the auto clam is not threadable as a heat press out of the box. It does need to be coupled with either the caddy stand or the counter caddy stand, which is going to lift it up and give you a little bit of a cantilever design so that you could thread it on. Presses like the Fusion or the Dual Air Fusion or any presses like that are 100% fully threadable out of the box. But I like it. Nothing against laying two layers of fabric over a press, or if you don't have a press that is threadable, that is perfectly fine. I don't want to knock that at all. If it is efficient for you to be printing on, that's fine. If you are in the market shopping for a heat press, I ask you to seriously consider threadability. I find it way more efficient, right? So I only have to worry about one layer of fabric being on the press. So any wrinkles are just in one layer of fabric that I could easily squash, right? Make it nice, smooth, flat, and even to print on. And so that other layer of fabric is underneath. Coming from the screen printing world, everything essentially is threaded onto a screen printing palette or a platen, right? So it is very natural for me on a heat press to be able to just thread it right on. Now, granted, everything is upside down then. So you're printing upside down. The shirt is upside down. So the neck of the shirt is facing you. The bottom hem is the farthest away from you. It's come very natural to me over 14 years of printing and specifically screen printing before I got sucked into the absolutely wonderful world of heat transfers. So nice to not have to burn screens or get inky or messy and still have that same quality with stuff like screen printed transfers, right? So you get all the same benefits without the mess, without the hassle, no squeegees or inks or emulsion, none of that. I love heat transfers for that. So, but that's a great question, Curious. And I'd be curious to know if you are threading on or if you are laying on over top. But with the vast majority of the shirts that I'm printing these days, standard crew neck cotton shirts, kind of like the one I have just above my office, if you're watching along live or right behind me. Yes, absolutely. I thread everything on that I can. It makes it nice and easy. Let's see. RSC, my motive says, what's the difference in placing the shirt on the platen versus loading on the platen? So that's kind of like what we just talked about too, is threading gives you that ability to just go through one layer of fabric. It makes it much easier, much quicker, much more efficient to just load on. If I just lay a t-shirt down flat on a table, there's going to be some wrinkles in that, right? So It's two layers of fabric. I find it so much quicker and easier to just isolate it, throw it right on in, and then I don't have to measure each side to see where the seam is. I can instantly see where a side seam is to make sure that I'm loaded straight down the platen, or even sometimes with tubular garments, I do a whole bunch. But the tubular garments that don't have side seams, they usually typically have like a fold that'll get you in the right spot. But if you grab that same location on both sides, go all the way down on the press, back that collar off the press, in just about that, in real time, in 5 or 6 seconds, you have loaded a shirt perfectly straight on the platen every single time. And I learned that from guys who are running screen printing presses for 25 years that are throwing them on there and printing thousands of shirts an hour in those huge commercial print shops. So definitely something to consider there. But guys, great questions. I'm curious, does say I'm threading. So great getting around to that. Let's see. Alexander says, yes, pricing and profits. Let's get into some of these pricing questions on here because it is very, very important. Now, this one comes from Jay Diesel, right? Says, good evening, everybody. What's a good profit margin for a hoodie sale? $15 to $20 profit on point. Jay thinks that charging $60 and up for a hoodie with a vinyl design is too much and people may shy away from purchasing. Of course, we all want to make the most profit off of everything we do, but where do we draw the lines in terms of the price point for our items? In a nutshell, Jay, and anybody else wondering about pricing there, cover yourself. Absolutely. Number one, paramount, cover your expenses. Don't lose money on every job. What does your time cost? And that is your price. Sure, you could always mark up more, right? You could absolutely always mark up more, but you need to ensure that you are paying yourself. I have another question in here about a fundraiser, right? So this is doing t-shirts for a nonprofit in the long term, right? The decision is how much do we give back to the nonprofit, that percentage of sales. It will be set up online on Shopify, so an on-demand e-commerce store or a maybe open for pre-sale and then closed. Any advice or suggestions would be greatly appreciated, right? So I think this is a fantastic question too as we talk about pricing because your customer might be a nonprofit, but guess what? You are not, right? You are a for-profit business and you need to charge accordingly for your time. So what you could do is try to automate the print-on-demand aspect of that as much as possible. So you're reducing any touch points or having to manually order everything. And there's a lot of software, including Fulfillingen, that could really help you limit that. So now that's going to limit your time investment into it, which could then limit the cost for them as well. But you still want to be, you know, essentially looking at your overhead as well as the cost of the garments. You'll typically see a very simple cost times two. So whatever the garment costs for you to buy, and whatever the transfer or decoration cost is, whether it be embroidery or direct to garment or heat transfers, whatever it may be, you take those two and you double it. And in most cases, that's going to cover your overhead expenses. So software subscriptions, equipment, heat presses, even machines like computers, any investment you've made in your business, electricity, rent, even if you're working out of your home, what is that portion of rent that you're, you know, writing off essentially on your taxes that is part of your business? So take all of those expenses and add them up. You'll get a much better, clear view of it. But I know a lot of decorators or creatives that have started decorating t-shirts have that issue with, doing those numbers, and maybe not so much an issue, or they just don't have the time, or they don't have the financial know-how. Josh put together an absolutely wonderful video on calculating your overhead and setting your profits accordingly over on the Stalls TV YouTube channel. If you just search profits and overhead, he does a much more in-depth analysis than I could do on the podcast right here. But my advice is always, before you price anything, check your costs. And always ensure that you're going to be making money on anything you do. So whatever it's going to look like for that nonprofit, right? Whatever they want to price it at, you're going to price it at whatever it's going to make sense for you. And if you can't meet in the middle, then you're going to lose money on that job. And if you're losing money on a job, is it worth it to take it on? The race to the bottom is always going to be a very, very slippery slope. And if you just compare yourself with, say, a national for this nonprofit, scenario, if you compare yourself with a national print-on-demand service, right? They're not going to adjust their pricing just because someone's nonprofit or not. It doesn't matter to them. It's still the same cost, and it's still the same cost to decorate it. They have the same overhead expenses. So depending on the customer, it's not going to matter what that is. So you just got to make sure that you find it out. Kind of back to Jay's question, right? Of is $60 too much for a decorated hoodie? I will say that myself personally, I bought a youth hoodie for my daughter from her school, from their online spirit store, and it was $65 for a youth hoodie. And I bought it, and I see a ton of those hoodies all walking around the school. And so $60 for a hoodie, definitely not out of the range. I saw some with some really nice applique on them for $80, right? So it is, it really depends on the customer, depends on the audience, but you want to ensure that you're making money. So let's just say scenario here real quick for hoodies, and then we're gonna move on to another question. And I want to go back to the chat to see if there's any other ones, because I think we're kind of running out of time here. So many hoodies available in that $12 to $17 range blank. Cool. With a $5 decoration, if we just cost times two that, that's going to be putting us anywhere in the $34 to what, $42 range, right? So sports, school, merchandise, where you have this built-in audience, you have a fan base who is going to buy, and they know that the proceeds of that garment that they're buying are going to go back and support the team or the musician, the band, whatever, you know, that merch that they're buying. And so they know it's going to be going back there. So they're going to be selling them for $50 plus. So we just built in $10 for every hoodie that the end customer is going to sell. Everybody's making money. You're making 12 to or 17 to 20 some bucks on everyone, depending on how you're marking it up. And that's just with that simplified cost times two pricing model, right? So everybody's making money, everybody wins. And then your customer's going to be happy, you're going to be happy, and they're going to come back for you for more, right? You just really have to be careful of that race to the bottom. It is a slippery slope of pricing where somebody's always going to give the lower price. And I always recommend, especially if you're just getting started out and you're saying, oh, it's such a crowded, competitive field here. What's going to, you know, I can't compete with their prices. That's when you build value in your brand, build value in your services. And that's going to erase almost any price, kind of conversation that you may have with your customers, because they're going to go, well, you're a pro. I want you to be doing this. You're always going to go find another printer, right? You could easily go find somebody decorating apparel overseas. Yes, you might have to pay for shipping. And yes, you might have to wait 2 months before it shows up, but you could always get it cheaper. You'll always find something cheaper. Don't race to the bottom on price, right? Use the value of you, right? So your turn time. Is it your customization? Is it the design help? Is it your communication that's very forward and fluid with your customers, so it's building trust? Is it your customer service when things go wrong, or you follow up with every order? Hey, I just want to make sure you're satisfied with your order, right? Is it the locality that they could just come to you, and that improves turn time, of course. They don't have to pay for shipping. They're able to just drop by the shop and pick it up. It's convenient for them. Leverage that, right? Any professional suggestions? So like even with like artwork of, okay, this is going to be best for this print method here. Let me show you, right? And having that knowledge and using that and helping your customers thrive with their own projects is going to really put you above. So you could see that if it's even quality, right? I'm going to blow the quality out from anybody else doing it. That's fine, right? That is a great value to add to your business. So vinyl also shouldn't be the concern in Jay's question here. When he's is $60 too much for just vinyl on a hoodie? You'll see that many, many specialty effects that go for that premium price rate are actually achieved the easiest and the highest quality with a cuttable product. So a heat transfer vinyl, right? I'm going to use my daughter as an example again. She does gymnastics at a local gymnastics gym. They do almost everything, all of their merch is with vinyl. I know that 99% of people who buy that merch there don't know. They don't know how the sausage is made. They don't know decoration methods from another. They're probably just going to say, oh, it's silk screened, because that's all they've ever heard for apparel, right? So the customers who, the vast majority as decorators, we care. And now I know it's vinyl, right? Because every single shirt that I see on the shelf at Target or Walmart or that my daughter gets from her gymnastics gym, I go, give it a tug. Oh, this is heat transfer vinyl, right? Your customers aren't necessarily doing that. And if it's applied correctly, it's not going to feel like a sticker. If it's designed correctly with your expertise, it's not going to look bad. And so you need to be able to leverage that and not be worried about customers knowing the print method, because I've been in the industry for 14 years, right? And a very, very, very small amount of people go, oh, this is this decoration method. Only if you're in the industry, they do. We're always our own worst critics, right? And we are in this business. So of course we know, but sometimes we lose sight that the general public just does not know, right? And they're happy with a decorated shirt, or they just want their brand. They want their saying, they want their artwork on a shirt. And that's the end goal to them. Now I will say, using the gymnastics as the same example, of course they do just standard one and two color prints with a heat transfer vinyl that look great, right? But they also do a really, really premium crew neck. I think it's on a Bella canvas. So it does feel really, really plush and nice, but it's using flock. So the flock heat transfer vinyl that gives it this awesome fabric texture, and it's a two color on it, and it just really pops and looks super, super premium. But guess what they're selling that for? $65. And it's definitely not costing even half of that to produce, much, much less. So not only is the brand making money, but whoever is producing that is making money as well. So always ensure that you are doing your cost analysis, right? That is the number one, or maybe it might be the number two mistake in the top apparel decorating mistakes that I've seen over my career. And a lot of people will just dive in and try to meet the price point for their customer. And their customer's like, sweet, absolutely, I'll order that right now. Let me give you the money and get going, because they just got a quote from somebody else that was $2 per piece higher. And you just came in lower trying to race to the bottom. And now as you're actually producing it, maybe you hit a snag, maybe you ruin a garment, and now you have to replace a garment. And now that's coming out of your profit margin. And at the end of the day, when you do a cost analysis of like, all right, well, the garments cost this, this is what the transfer cost, when I factor in my time and the cost for the heat press, because I'm trying to pay off the credit card or whatever it may be, when I factor in my Adobe Creative Cloud subscription over the course of the entire month, man, I actually lost $30 on this job. And now your customer is going to come back and go, hey, can we do that same order that I did last time? Because they were expecting to, and they could have, they would have paid a higher price, but because you offered that lower price, that's what they're offering. And then now they're going to come back and you're going to say, hey, well, last time I made a mistake and it's actually more expensive. And they might be like, cool, yeah, I figured you made a mistake because that was a deal too good to pass up. I love the quality. I'm happy to order them from you again. Or some customers are like, you're bait and switching me, man. And they'll try to get you to stay on that lower price, which is going to continue for you to lose money, which is not going to be driving you for success. I want you to be successful. And so always do that cost analysis before you give any quotes. And it's great to standardize it across the board as well. So I hope that's a little bit of the pricing and profits. Yes, Alexander, that I hope that that helped you out there. Awesome. And I see they threw the link in there as well. Hopefully we'll be able to put it in the link in the description if you're listening on any of the replay feeds or anything in there. Janilda says, yes, we want to succeed too. Yes. And I am in your corner doing everything I can. And I noticed that we are already 18 minutes over of where we should be. And I would love to hang out with you guys. There's so many more questions here. We'll do one more question then we're going to wrap this one up. But thank you so much for tuning into the Heat Press for Profit podcast. You could tell that this is like the favorite part of my week or my day or what month, even sometimes years, being able to come and hang out with decorators just like yourself. I am so absolutely floored that I get to help. So one last question and we'll wrap this one up here today. Judy Schenker asks on Facebook, can you all tell me what transfers are the lightest material that is similar to regular screen printing? I don't like transfers because they always feel so thick and heavy. So kind of like what we talked about earlier with the thick feel of some of those older style transfers, or even the, less expensive options out there of direct-to-film or even some white toner prints or some hybrid transfers, right, out there. And especially it comes down to the way they're designed. But I will say, coming from screen printing myself, and I will say this every single day or every hour or every podcast that I'm on, the Goofproof screen printed transfers and the new Plastisol Pro transfers from Transfer Express and Stahls. Plastisol Pro is a Stahls product, but the Goofproof screen printed transfers from Transfer Express, I've been using exclusively for 3 years, and they look, feel, and wear exactly like a screen print on a garment. I have showed them to people that I know who are in the industry who have not been able to tell they are a transfer. They think they're a screen print, which they are produced with the same exact Plastisol inks that I've seen used in commercial print shops in my entire career. It's always a Plastisol print, and then it even is softer to the hand too because it's flattened by the heat press. And we see a lot of actual screen printers using heat presses or the Stampinator, right, to flatten prints out for a little bit better feel on the garment. Helps cure it and make sure that it's on there nice and good. So why are we doing this with huge, expensive $250,000 machines when we could be doing it with a heat press? And that is why I love screen print and transfer so much. You could screen print from a closet or a spare bedroom or a basement without the need for the huge setups, any dryers, the spray out booth for your inks and emulsions and the chemicals that you need. I'm able to seriously reduce my footprint and just be able to fire up a heat press and be like, I'm screen printing today. I'm printing some shirts today, right? And not have to go through the entire process. I will just caveat in that I still absolutely love screen printing, but I love it for the art of it. I love the process. I'm an artist at heart, came from the design background and got into printing and got into marketing and got into helping people just like you with all of my experience through my career. And I'm happy to share it. And I'm happy to help. But I'll screen print if I want to screen print for, and I got into posters a lot. So that's really where my screen printing lies these days. But even it's very, very rare because it's so much easier to just have a heat press, be able to pull it out and fire it up and print t-shirts when I need it. The quality is just this. It's probably even better. It took me 3 weeks to be able to pull a screen print, and then I'd always be, oh man, this squeegee needs sharpened. All my off contacts not enough. This screen isn't the same tension of what it was the last time that I reclaimed it. So now my prints are smearing. It's all of that is reduced. It's not a troubleshooting. It's not a labor of love, right? That screen printing is to me. I'm looking to make money. I'm looking to print shirts. I'm pulling out the heat press, right? If I had a whole team and a whole shop, might be a different story, but I don't, right? So I will say too, just to wrap this up, any transfer could feel absolutely phenomenal, regardless of its decoration method, if it is designed for the process. And that is somewhere where I know a lot of the you know, my friends and family and people that I know, they know me as Dave the T-shirt guy, right? So they'll be like, Dave, he'll make this work. And I was just working with a local musician here just a couple weeks ago, right? Who sent over a design that was a sticker. It felt like a sticker. It looked like a sticker, right? It was a solid background, 7 colors. So I was like, okay, nobody's screen printing this. He works at a screen printing shop too and said, I'm not going to screen print this, but I know you have some other methods that might be able to get me lower quantities to start. He's, you know, essentially a full-time musician with a part-time job working at a print shop. And so he says, I know you have some methods that are going to be able to possibly nail this. I looked at the artwork and I modified it to say, I don't think this is what you're looking for. I've been a musician on the road trying to sell money to put gas in the tank, right? To get onto the next show or feed myself. And I don't think this is going to, number one, relate with your audience. And number two, be the high quality merch that you think it's going to be, regardless of the print method, right? Because you're not going to find a screen printer who's going to do a 9-color water-based that's, number one, going to meet the quantity restriction that you want or even be able to be the price. There's screen printers that I know who've been doing it for 20 years who are like, nah, I don't touch water-based, right? And that's like the soft hand feel that you could get with those like really nice screen prints. Or, of course, sublimation gives you that no-hand feel, but you're limited to white polyester only. And these were cotton poly blend hoodies with a 100% cotton face. So no sublimation on that, right? So being able to flex the experience that I have and modify the artwork to knock areas out to the garment, regardless of what technique you're using, whether you're screen printing or you're direct to garment or you're direct to film, you are putting ink over a breathable fabric, right? The masks that we all had to wear, right? They were t-shirt fabric sometimes and we had to breathe through them. They breathe. If you would have printed a full flood of ink over that, it would have made it a lot harder to breathe, and that's how a t-shirt is. So getting some areas in there so that the screen printing inks that we use for our goof-proof transfers move and flex, even the direct-to-film, the Ultracolor Max, being so lightweight with that thin layer of ink that it moves and flexes really good with the garment. But anytime you're covering those holes in the garment, it's covering it up, and it could affect not necessarily the feel of the print, but the way it feels to the wearer. So just opening up a little bit of areas in there, regardless of what printing method you're using, are seriously going to make your prints better to wear, and people are going to love to wear them. I'm going to go to the chat real quick right here. Casey says, thank you, Dave. You do such a good job. Well, thank you, Casey, for tuning in. These would not be here without you. So thank you to everybody tuning in today. I am always more than happy to help. I am absolutely floored that and so excited that this is part of my job, is helping decorators just like you. And I'd love to keep the conversation going to make sure that you're in tune with that community over on Facebook, the Heat Press for Profit Facebook group. Yeah, I live, eat, sleep, breathe printing and t-shirts and design, so much so that I get a nice breath of fresh air when I get to nerd out about it, when I go to all the trade shows, because, oh, my wife has heard about it over the years, but she actually got into it too. She's working with individuals with disabilities and being able to help them kind of transition into the workforce. And the apparel decorating industry is a great place for you know, essentially individuals who could do the do tasks and be able to have very meaningful careers. If you are listening to our podcast all the time, Kelly had Jed from Stakes Manufacturing on just a couple weeks ago, and an absolutely phenomenal interview about how Jed, he advocates so much and has these programs in place. But you can see that it spreads around. I don't want to get into it too much. Man, thank you so much for hanging out with us here today. And I really want to thank you for tuning into the Heat Press for Profit podcast. Of course, here at Stahls, myself and the entire team, we always aim for this content to inspire new ideas and help decorators really learn, connect with each other, and reach your success. All of our goals are different, whether you're a side hustle or you're multi-million dollar commercial printing shop. We want to be here for you. We want to share in your success. We want to help your challenges. And we love to keep the conversation going. So thank you so much for tuning in and listening to this episode of the Heat Press for Profit podcast. Please join our community over on Facebook with the Heat Press for Profit, powered by Stahls Facebook group. But until next time, we do have a very exciting interview coming up next week with Gina from KC Swagger right before the big game. And we're going to talk to Gina about what she's done to grow from a side hustle to a brick and mortar spirit wear powerhouse. Of course, with all of the fun happenings going on in Kansas City, we'll be talking with Gina next week. So tune in noon every single Friday. And of course, wherever you listen to your podcast, be it Spotify or Apple, iHeartRadio, and of course, even YouTube, we have podcasts everywhere. So search the Heat Press for Profit podcast and subscribe. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. I apologize that we went a little late, but I think we had some great discussions and great conversation. I thank you so much. So until next time, I'm Dave. Happy pressing.